Welcome to the beginning of the fourth season of Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and you're listening to the show at our new home, Community Progressive Radio, at cprmetro.org. And also, you can listen to all of the shows for this season, the future shows, and the past shows at our archives at cindysheehansoapbox.com. We're here back on the air because of you, because of our supporters. And we're just so grateful to you, and we're so happy to be able to present voices that aren't heard in the national dialogue or discourse at this time in our history. We're excited to be part of the new progressive family at cprmetro.org also. We are starting the new season off with gusto, trust me, as our first guest is the legendary Phil Donahue. I think everyone knows Phil as a television personality and courageous voice against war and other oppression. But with the so-called end to the war in Iraq, which stole the life of my son and many hundreds of thousands of others, we are bringing Phil on today to talk about war and to discuss his film, Body of War. In 2007, Donahue served as executive producer for the feature documentary film, Body of War, which he also co-directed with independent filmmaker Ellen Spiro. The film tells the story of Thomas Young, a severely disabled Iraq War veteran and also a friend of mine, and his turbulent post-war adjustments. In November 2007, the film was named as one of 15 documentaries to be in consideration for an Oscar nomination from the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. Phil Donahue, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Happy to be here, Cindy.
Oh, it's such an honor to have you on the show, and it's nice to talk to you and hear your voice again.
Well, I feel that way, too. We kind of encountered each other at a very, very kind of pressure-packed time, certainly for you, much more mm-hmm. than me. But I remember you at the Brooklyn Church, the Lafayette Street Presbyterian Church in the Red Bank section of Brooklyn.
Right.
So that was a good time, and it's the first time I really had a chance to see you and meet you face-to-face.
You also gave me an award from, I think it was New York Peace Action.
Yes, I did.
So it's so awesome to talk to you again. But I want to talk about your movie, Body of War. It features a very dear friend of mine, Thomas Young, and I know you got close to Thomas, too. But with the alleged end to the war on Iraq, how is your film still relevant today?
Well, I believe our film shows how easy it is for a president who constructs a strategy of fear can lead an entire nation into the sword, which is exactly what happened with George Bush and this massive blunder, this invasion of Iraq. He scared the heck out of everybody. He created talking points. A smoking gun will become a mushroom cloud. I mean, a gun smokes after it's been fired. Saddam Hussein reminds me of Hitler. John Warner on the floor of the Senate. Saddam Hussein has more weapons of mass destruction now than Hitler ever had. That is a direct quote.
Mm-hmm.
Ted Stevens of Alaska. This is what you can do to a grown man. Ted Stevens of Alaska stood up in the Senate floor and he said, "History will show that the nations that stopped Saddam Hussein saved the world." I mean, and then, you know, you could hear the drums. You could feel the nation's heartbeat accelerate.
Mm-hmm.
And before we knew it, we had more than 4,000 uniformed Americans, men and women both, including your son, who gave the ultimate sacrifice for what we have to say, Cindy, is the worst foreign policy decision, based on a lie as it was, in the history of this nation?
Well, we have, I mean, of course, Iraq certainly wasn't the first war that the U.S. shouldn't have become involved in. And we see Vietnam vets on the streets in their wheelchairs or homeless or, you know, drinking themselves or using drugs and, you know, committing slow suicide still on the streets. And my contention is that war, you know, as long as wars are profitable for some, as long as there are natural resources that the U.S. exploiter class can control, wars won't end. How can your film contribute to a national dialogue about how our troops are misused for profit and exploitation? And then part two of the question is, how dangerous do you think robotic warfare is? It saves the lives of our troops, maybe, but then this country, this nation, mostly pays lip service to veterans, pays lip service to people like Thomas and people like my son, who's, you know, Thomas's life, of course, will never be the same again. My life and the life of everybody Casey loved will never be the same again. Mm-hmm. So how can we learn the lesson? We didn't learn the lesson of Vietnam, obviously. How can we learn the lesson of Iraq? Mm-hmm. And how can your film contribute to that?
By the way, Casey died very near and not, it wasn't on the same day, or was it? As Thomas
it was
injured.
No, it was the same day. It was the same battle. So Casey was killed in that battle, and Thomas was injured.
Oh, my. Well, well, you know, how do we, first of all, I don't have to tell you, Cindy, we can't get cynical. If we do, what does it matter what we do? Well, you know, we have wars, not, you know, wars, presidents will be president. If you surrender like this, we're, you know, already. And I'm very good at preaching to the choir, which I feel I'm doing right now. Cindy, you've informed yourself about all these things in a wonderful, wonderful testimony to your son, who went over there with, like Thomas Young, the subject of our film, with a very good heart and a very big interest in supporting his country, protecting his country. And you just can't stand there and look at this and not do something. So the question is, what? Well, the first thing, I think, is to appreciate we are not declaring wars constitutionally. The framers were right. Don't give the decision about war to one person, especially one man. If you give a president a cruise missile, he will fire it. If you spend $2 billion a day on things that go boom, $2 billion a day,
uh-huh.
and you give the president the power all by himself, without even the approval or the recommendation of Congress. Only Congress can declare war. There's a reason for that. It makes it more likely that we're going to breathe a little bit before we whip out those guns and develop a don't mess with Texas foreign policy. The framers were brilliant, and we have not exercised Article 1, Section 8 since the early 40s. Congresses do not want this responsibility. So
right.
What they're afraid that if the wrong vote will be politically fatal. So what they do is they put their hand over their eyes and they hand permission. If he thinks so, if you think so, Mr. President, if you feel we have to, here's our permission. That way they can cover themselves if it goes wrong. This is what I think has to be corrected.
Well, you know, sometimes, I mean, it's true that the Constitution has been overlooked, and it's getting, you know, even worse, almost to the point that with the USA Patriot Act and the signing of the NDAA recently, that, you know, the Constitution, especially the Bill of Rights, is being rendered meaningless. You know, I'm against war. I'm a peace advocate. I don't even think that Congress has the correct tools to declare war. You know, I think that war is a failed policy. It's a lose-lose situation from the very beginning. But now we have a situation like I asked in the question, is how can we have an American population and we have a government, like I said, that will exploit the troops for votes or pay lip service to their service, but then, you know, when they get home and they're wounded emotionally, physically, mentally, that they're basically shoved to the back burner, and we're increasingly using robotic warfare. So we don't care about our live flesh and blood troops that go over there. I mean, I'm not saying nobody does. I mean, obviously many people do. But now we're going to have robots bombing innocent civilians. And, you know, that's the thing that gets lost is the civilian costs, the collateral damage to the war. How dangerous do you think that this trend is?
We have to recognize that a man sits in a control room. I'm not sure exactly where. I've heard Maryland, and I've heard Nevada.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he looks at a television monitor. He has a joystick. The television monitor transmits over 4,000 miles the image that the drone, the unmanned aerial vehicle, sees as it flies over, more recently, Afghanistan. And as he looks at the monitor and the picture that is being taken by the nose camera, he sees the insurgents, and he fires a rocket, an incendiary device. This is from Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
And we are killing children. And this is happening on Obama's watch.
Right.
They call them wasps over there. Apparently the drone sounds like a bzzz, and the children hide under trees.
Mm-hmm.
We have become the thing we hate. Mm-hmm. In an article, in an interview that I had with Pacifica, I was campaigning for Norman Solomon along the North Coast. A friend of mine who, by the way, takes no super PAC, no corporate PAC money, none. So I'm really on this guy's side. Norman Solomon, District 2, California, the North Coast. It's a big redefined district, once held by Lynn Woolsey, who has
right.
resigned. In this article, I called for I said the best thing that President Obama could do now is go in front of the world's cameras and say the United States will not use unmanned aerial vehicles to fire rockets into the ground ever. We will reserve the right to use them for surveillance. I think that would do more to bring it. It wouldn't solve everything, to be sure.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we didn't have unmanned aerial vehicles 3 years ago, four. Why do we need them now?
Well, George Bush did start using them, but Obama has increased their usage by 300% since he's been president. And that's not like if he's president for 8 years, it will be 300%. Those are in actual numbers. So,
right.
You know, and I do talk to people in Pakistan and Afghanistan and Yemen who, you know, are terrorized. This is a weapon of terror against the population because they don't discriminate.
Cindy, where's the valor here?
Right.
Where's the courage? You know, where's the courage that Casey demonstrated in Solder City? I mean, or Thomas Young? Where's the courage that's been demonstrated by guys in the sand and women in the sand over there? Ducking down, not knowing where the incoming is going to be coming from. And here is a United States military sworn-in person, proud American, I'm sure,
mm-hmm.
who is totally safe in a control room in the continental United States participating in a war more than 4,000 miles away and killing old people and children while they're sleeping at night. We have become the thing we hate.
Well, and I say, you know, they bomb children for their job during the day and then go home and have dinner with their children.
Tuck their own kids in bed.
Right. Help them with their homework and go to their soccer games and things like that.
Right.
You know, it's,
Casey,
I mean, I'm not poor.
Right. Your son will never go to a tailgate party. We'll never, you know, see a graduation of a child. I mean, never see a Super Bowl. I mean, I hate to be dramatic about this, but somehow we have to grasp the American people by the lapels and say, do you understand what is happening around the world in the name of your country?
Mm-hmm.
And the Constitution is there. The more we got into this film, the more respect I got for the framers, really. All the, you know, the importance of habeas. What a,
right,
you know, we've... all these things that are being, and, you know, the Bush guys ran around the world saying, democracy, democracy, and chipped away at the bedrock of our own. The whole Bill of Rights to these people is kind of like a quaint idea, and it's not really practical at a time like this. So give me all the power, and I will protect you. This is what they are saying, and we are killing our young adult children.
Well, and you earlier said that you think Obama should get up and say, you know, get up in front of the world's cameras and say we're never going to use drones again. But last week he was up in front of the world's cameras and talking about the what's happening in Iran. And you write, and he said that no options are off the table in dealing with Iran. So we have to assume that also means a nuclear option. But
yeah.
you rightly question the highly suspicious rush to invade Iraq. I mean, you and people like you and us, we've been proven to be, you know, 100% correct. But how do you compare that with the new rhetoric vis-a-vis Iran? It's almost like they just changed the last letter of the names and kept the rhetoric to suit the situation.
I agree with you. And let's consider this. I could never vote for Ron Paul. I'm sorry, he looks like a nice guy, and I'm sure he's going to heaven. But he has way too much baggage for me. But here's my point. Ron Paul is getting up in front of large audiences, and as you know, he's a lot of young people. And he's saying, what are we doing with all these wars? Why are we engaging in this adventurism? Why do we feel we have to be the policemen of the world? Here's what just knocks me out. No other candidate can say that. Not even the president. Can you imagine Mitt Romney saying, we can't be the policemen of the world. Why are we invading all these countries? They feel it would be politically fatal. So on an issue that is so important, you know, how many young men and women are going to come home in a pine box? In an issue that's most important at the top of the agenda of this nation is off the table in this roller derby primary season. They're not talking about it. This is amazing, amazing to me. I mean, for the families that patriotically have recently sent a son or daughter to Afghanistan, just recently, they have to ask themselves, why aren't we talking about this? It's all about who's ahead, who's behind, the Sunnis, the Shiites. No one ever talks about why we did this in the first place. No media mogul has ask for an investigation or a commentary like this. It's always who's ahead, who's not, where are the aircraft carriers, you know, and then it's this kind of attitude where, you know, a kind of a, Iran is sort of a, you know, they're showing off, you know, these boats in the Strait of Hormuz, you know, this is what four-year-old boys do in the bathtub. This is Iran huffing and puffing. and we have Rick Santorum out there. They better not. I'm telling you, he can't wait to send more sons and daughters to war. And Iran is showing off. What we should be is the big, mighty cop that we paid a fatal amount of money for. This is damaging and threatens the life of this nation, I believe. $2 billion a day? Maybe the one thing we can do is stand over something like the Strait of Hormuz, understanding that this is a smaller country with a potential for a mighty gun like a nuclear bomb, which, by the way, we allow ourselves to have, but no one else is permitted. Oh, well, thank you very much, United States. What else do you allow us to do? This is arrogance. It's chutzpah. And I think what the United States could really do is calm the temperature, to lower the temperature of war fever at a time like the Strait of Hormuz. We could be watchful. We could really do our best to engage other countries. Obama should call Angela and Nick Sarkozy and say, hey, what do you want to do? Well, I don't know. What do you want to do? Well, let's talk about it. Instead, the United States is ready to go all by itself to solve the world's problem. We're going to bomb more people. And right now, nobody likes us. Nobody likes us. And I believe that is a threat to my grandchildren. I think, are they going to get on a public vehicle wondering if this is the wrong bus? Are they going to look over their shoulders? Are they going to hear buzzes? You know, a lot of people are going to be able to make unmanned aerial vehicles. Are they going to hear wasps and have to dive under a tree? You know, this, we can't. Cindy, you've said this so often. We can't bomb ourselves to peace. And we have to start reaching out instead of lashing out.
Well, we have a situation. Whomever is the Republican nominee for president this year and the Democratic nominee, Obama, their foreign policy is going to be very similar. So they're not, you know, back in 2008, there was never any debates between McCain and Obama that really had any substance to them.
Correct.
There's not going to be any debates with substance in 2012, but we have this nascent Occupy movement that is rising up that doesn't seem to want to address these questions. $2 billion a day, Phil. What could we do in the United States with $2 billion a day?
Imagine.
How would you like to see the Occupy movement be a real political, player in this without saying we're going to support the Democrat, you know, no matter what? How do you think that they could change the dialogue and actually change policy this year?
Honestly, I think they already have, Cindy. It hasn't been a punch to the establishment's gut yet. But I think it has the potential to be that. It is,
right.
Here at Zuccotti Park here in Manhattan, I know those heavyweights in Wall Street are looking out that window down on that park. I just know it. And they're saying, how am I responsible for this? And, you know, was a hedge fund really a good idea? And do we own the casino and we're taking the money of these people who are foolishly pouring it into our slot machines? We created this casino. We own all the paper. We know what it's worth, and we know when it'll be worth nothing. And we know, therefore, when to sell it. This is as gross a violation of fundamental courtesy and civility that has been totally violated by the powerful of Wall Street, who are covered by the powerful of media, and no real pushback is to be seen.
Well, Phil, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. We really, you know, I speak for so many people, we really miss your voice. You know, you have a voice of reality, yet you have this real infectious optimism that I think is just so lacking in the national discourse right now.
You're very kind to say, Cindy. I'm very proud to be at least, you know, a, a, a sort of low key member of the movement. I've met a lot of nice people. By the way, you're at the top of the list. I've met people on Park Avenue. In penthouses that had meetings and really care. People who go back to Ben Spock and Sane. There is, by the way, Cindy, we're popular. Most of the nation agrees with us. We'll have a hard time getting used to this. The American people are fed up with these wars. It took too many bodies to get them there, but they are there. And our mission now is we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We have to get the people who agree with us to come out of their closet of silence, stand up, and say so. It's amazing what we'll be able to do.
Well, Phil, you're a national treasure, and you're a treasure to humanity. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
For taking the time to be on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Oh, I had a good time. And thank you so much, Cindy. Pleased to talk to you again. I'm looking forward to seeing you soon.
Okay, me too. Thank you, Phil Donahue. Wow, what a great way to start off 2012, a very important year in the history of our country and the history of the world. And after talking to Phil, I'm ready to take it by the horns and really get down to brass tacks. And have I had enough cliches right now? But that was a really, really great show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. My new book, Revolution, a Love Story, is finally finished. You can get more information about it at my website, CindySheehanSoapbox.com. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my producer, Mikey, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, my supporters and the listeners for listening and giving us this soapbox to continue with, and Phil Donahue for being my guest. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Thank you.
I must make my witness. I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. Sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes. As if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest, I don't want you to riot, I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being, God damn it, my life has value. Thank you.
get up now. I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore! Just get up from your chairs right now. Go stick your head out and yell and keep yelling, I'm as mad as hell, I'm not going to take this anymore! Just get up from your chairs.
They're yelling in Baton Rouge.